colleagues, I think it's on time to resume our work, and I'd like to call Drissen to make a presentation on the interface programming of a parliamentary application. Thank you.
Okay, ciao. Thanks for giving me the floor and for giving me the opportunity to tell something about our application programming interface, which we are working on as we speak. First of all, I would like to tell you something about my own background. I've been working for Dutch Parliament, House of Representatives, since 1981. I started out as a stenographer. I got a training there for 3 years. I was a stenographer for 20 years, and about 5 years ago, I was asked to become project manager for the new websites, as it was called at the time. It was the intranet site, Dutch intranet site, but also the Dutch internet site that Bruno showed the homepage of, and said some nice words about. Thank you, Bruno, for that. Now about the API, API as we call it in Dutch. First of all, I would like to show you the start of it. That's this. I don't know if you can see it on the slide as well. This is a card from our card tray, which shows the history of legislation, of particular law in Holland. This was a very important system in the Netherlands until August last year. It was in use since the end of World War II. We also had a system, we still have it, which is called Parlando. It's a sort of a database search engine, which is still in use, which contains all parliamentary documents. We also, the members of the IT department will recognize a screen like this. It also had a system for committee information, agendas, not the documents, which was called Twekis. It was based on IBM AS 400, a very old machine. There was only one staff member in the Netherlands of the IT department who knew something about it. And he wasn't that well anymore. He was near his pension age, so if something had happened to him, it would have gone out of the air. A few years ago, 10, 12 years ago, Parliament decided that they had to replace these systems I showed with a parliamentary information system called PARLIS. As I told you, it started 10 years ago. It started with a project which was called Integratiebestanden, to say it in Dutch, the integrations of documents. It failed completely. A lot of money went into it, but never there was never any result. 4 or 5 years ago, we still had the need of a parliamentary information system. So a new project was started, PARLIS. Difficult project. I already told you it was the parliamentary information system. It contains information about plenary sessions, but committee sessions as well. It was launched in September 2008. It's kind of a workflow and a document management system. It's based on Microsoft SharePoint, K2 workflow engine, and .NET. It contains agendas, documents, letters from the public, legislation. And since September 2008, it contains 100,000 documents. I think that's quite a lot. It has no history. And we started in September 2008 with documents which were still in order at that moment. It has no history from the years before 2008. It looks a bit like this. You can see at the screen that it's based on SharePoint. It's only accessible at the moment for people within the parliament, so members of parliament and civil servants and people employed by politicians. If you are very interested in it, I can give you a live demonstration on the computer outside of the room, because through a special key I do have access to the system from the outside. This system makes it possible for us to give the important legislative information to the public. It's the first system we have which contains this information. So agendas, the documents which are on this agenda, and the different steps in the legislative process, it's all in Parlus. It's a very important system for us. Personally, it wasn't my project. I was involved with it since April 2008 as an implementation manager, as it was called. It was my duty to get it in the air at the right time, which worked quite well. Lots and lots of people are interested in the information Parlus contains. First of all, our websites are, because we want to share this information with the public. But there are other interested parties, like the governmental sites, newspapers, weblogs, political parties, political sites, etc., etc. These are the logos of a few of them. With weblogs, you can see that there's one which is called Sargasso. Sargasso wrote a letter to Parliament in 2006 where they asked specifically to provide the public with more information than Parliament did at that time. And it was supported by lots and lots of people. Here you see a picture of monkeys. Why monkeys? Because api in Dutch is the same as monkey. Do you know already an API? Yes, you do. I will show you a few. Hives, which is the Dutch name for Facebook, very popular in the Netherlands, Yahoo, Amazon.com, the New York Times, Facebook. But we're still missing a big one, an important API or API. And of course, that's the big one, the 800-pound gorilla of web APIs. And that's Google. All these mashups that are made with products of Google are done through an API. It's for all these companies, it's their most valuable asset. They provide their data most of the time for free. They do this by following standards, and in less than 10 years they are playing an important role in our society. Most of the people, I think you yourselves also, use them on a daily basis. Wikipedia is also an API, YouTube, Flickr. What is it? Application programming interface. The Wikipedia definition is, it's a set of routines, data structures and or protocols in order to support the building of applications. It's as simple as that. Something about the semantic web. The vision of Sir Tim Berners-Lee, the founding father of the web, is that it was meant as the universal medium for data, information and knowledge exchange. A few few months ago, or maybe a year ago, gave a brilliant lecture on that subject, where he told everyone, to put it short, that websites, everyone transferring their own information through their own website is all fine, nice, and good to have, but it's much more important to share the information with each other. Companies already do it. I told you, Google, Amazon, different ones, DHL. People are also doing it. Hives, Facebook, MySpace, and parliaments? Not yet. But we're busy with it. I'm going to show you something from our technical infrastructure and the place of the API within. On top you see our own information systems we have inside our home. You see Parlis, which contains the parliamentary information, Vlos, which contains the records on the debates, DBG, which contains the audiovisual material, and all kinds of different systems. In the middle, as part of the middleware, you see the API, and on the outside, you see Parliament itself, governmental agencies, ministries, and others, newspapers, and the public. All these systems are sending or providing their information through the API, and they are sending it through the public. People can subscribe to our information. What's a good API? It's simple to use. It uses accepted standards. This is very important. It's easy to learn. You have to provide good documentation. It's difficult to abuse. You have to provide a good system of authentication and authorization. And it's large and complete enough to satisfy your customers. You have to know your target groups. Who wants it? We are planning to use standards, W3C standards, but also these standards, XML, RSS, ATOM, and the rest. It's technical. I'm not a technical person, but this is what we're going to use. We want to prevent abuse. Every user must tell who he is. He gets a key from us, and if we find out that our information is being abused, then we can quit his access to our API. And not every user, of course, has access to all of the information, because some of the information within Parlis is not meant for everyone. For instance, letters of the public to Parliament are not open to everyone within the Parliament. I cannot see them myself. Only members of Parliament and their staff, and members of our committee staff, and our clerk's office have access to letters of the public. We can provide with the right authentication and authorization by using our own systems, Active Directory. As I told you, the API must be simple so that it can be used by a large group of interested parties. It mustn't be an ambiguous source of information. You have to be consistent with the use of names and techniques. You have to avoid cryptic abbreviations. What's important with building an API is that you only get one chance to do it right. When it's published, your API, others are going to invest in the technique in, by which they can use the information on their own websites. And they will not be very happy if your API changes every month and they have to change their own websites as well. So you have to be very careful by making it. An API is there to stay. It's not something which you create and you can tell, well, after a month or two, I'm going to stop with it. You have to remember that. And it will grow bigger and bigger. The users who have invested in the use of your API expect that it will stay online, because the information is important to them. There's a few internal benefits. It fits very well within the information architecture of the House of Representatives, and it can provide data for our own systems. We want to bring the policy information on our own websites. We want to bring information from other systems to our websites. And within this architecture, the API is very helpful. Which is also a benefit, but it makes it necessary to harmonize the data structure within our systems, which is very important. At the time, it's not the case yet, but it will be necessary. It replaces complex connections between systems. At the moment, some of the information from Parlus is already shown on our website. It's done through a pretty difficult connection, which doesn't help very much with the performance of the Parlus system itself. By using the API, we can make that a lot better. So it has a positive influence on the performance of the source systems. It also has external benefits. We think it's an innovative platform as an answer to the demands from society. As I told you, people are demanding it from us. They are not happy anymore with parliaments that make a good website. What kind of generation it is, 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, they want the data, they want to use it themselves. And why is it? It's because they know their own target groups best. They know it better than we do or ever will. They can do things with the data we as Parliament never can do. For instance, a political party wants to use data from Parliament for their own information, for their own website. They can pick out only the things that members of that Parliament have done, and they can leave out the rest. So you make it a little bit simpler, just for their target group, their own party members. As a Parliament, we can never do that. So we have to bring the whole range and make it much more difficult for people to find their information. Another benefit is that it is a good platform for growth. New services can be provided through the existing API. Many people can and will use it. Political parties, government agencies, universities, the media, civil groups. In the Netherlands at the time, they are busy with a big project to put all the websites of the ministries, which are 14 in total, into one governmental site. I'm sure, and I know, because I've spoken with people from that project, that they would be very happy if they can have the information from Parliament as well. I've talked with, I think, about 9 groups from society, interest groups, and they are all very, very enthusiastic about the API. Why? It's because they also bring some political information, voting results, for instance, but they don't get it from Parliament. They have to use other sources which aren't as reliable as Parliament will be. So They would be most happy if we provided that data to them. There has been quite a lot of talk about transparency this morning, and I think a good API is the ultimate means of transparency of your parliamentary work. We don't have the exclusive right on our data because it was gathered within our parliament. It's from the people. They already paid for it, so give it to them. And as I already told, let others do what they do best, what they can do and will do better than we ever can. What's our internal planning on this? The API is being built, and first we will use it internally to put the party's information on our own sites. I think that will be the case in June next year. Then, if that works well, technically, we will put it open for external use. I hope that will be the case in September next year. We will be starting with one or two customers just to see how many requests are coming for information and what the load will be. But then, if it works well, we will expand very much, and at the end, maybe 100 or 200 or 300 customers will have a key to our API. There he is again, the monkey. This was the end of my presentation. If you have any questions.
Thank you, Rick. I don't know whether any colleague has any question or remark.
What would be your legal commitment to the use of information you will provide through this interface?
You said what will be the legal...
Yes.
As little as possible. As little as possible. Personally, I would prefer that we can give the information and they can do with it what they want. But that will surely not be the case. I'm planning to get a meeting with one of the government lawyers to make a contract which people have to sign if they want to have our information. But I think it will be a bad case of governmental behavior if we tell people exactly what they have to do with the data we are providing to them. As I already told you, they know best what they can do with it because they know their own target groups better than we do. But of course, real app use cannot be permitted.
Rick, two quick questions. Who's going to decide that it's being abused and that you'll have to cut a user off? Who will make that decision? And secondly, are you planning to do any authentication of the data yourself through digital signatures or in some way trying to assure its of accuracy and validity?
To start with your second question, we're still looking at that item. But I think we're planning to do this through our system that we already use, Active Directory. It's simple and users can get a certain role within our Active Directory and then that could provide the right key to them. Who will decide what will be app use or not? Difficult. At the end, I think it will be the top of parliament what will be abused, but I think that it works best if we come with a good proposal. So that's the reason why I will talk with the state attorney, the state lawyers on that subject. There are some examples in the world. from other APIs which already have contracts, and we can look into them and say, well, that's a good thing for us as well. But there are examples. I showed you them, but there are not many governmental examples of an API. The only one I came across is the European Octroi Bureau. I don't know the English. The European Patent Bureau that has an API. In the States, there are one or two, but not that many. A few museums. But I think personally, I really believe in it. I think it will be the future of what we are doing, especially in Parliament. It will make our work also a lot easier. I also have a question for you, my audience. And if there are other parliaments which are thinking about something like that, or are we still the only one? Can't imagine that. I would like very much to share some experiences on this field with you. No one is raising his or her hand. Denmark is.
I think we already have made the API between our Parley system, it calls ThinkDoc, and our new website, which we are going to talk about later. So
but you still
some
use
experience,
it
but not for external, not yet.
Not externally yet.
Not for external.
But you are thinking about it too.
Yes.
Okay. Great.
Finland.
There's a public program going on right now in Finland where they gather information of different public sectors which already have or would have these API interfaces. So it's going on and going further all the time. I have a question for you. What kind of response have you gotten to these ideas? What kind of response have you got to your ideas and API solutions? Has it been positive or negative?
Within the parliament, you mean?
Yes.
In the beginning, it was a little bit of a struggle, but more and more officials are willing to work on this idea. So there's not very much opposition anymore. So I'm quite positive that it will work out very well. I already had the go-ahead from my governmental body. So I'm optimistic. And you do have a good argument for doing this. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Rick.
And now I call the following presenter, who is from Denmark.
There are two,
and they are going to present.
Now we would like to make you pronounce our names.
Liselott and Soren. Is that correct?
That's very good.
Thank you.
Where do I find the?
This file. Okay, this one. The PowerPoint, yes. Okay, make it a slideshow. Put it like slideshow.
Well, as you can see, I'm not the technical person in our dynamic duo. Okay, thank you. Well, I would like to start presenting my colleague Liselotte, who's the head of the IT development department in the Danish parliament, and I'm the head of the communication department. And we have decided to go up here today together because we are introducing a new website after summer, and we are cooperating very much about this website. So actually we have offices next to each other, so we can make sure that that the angle of communication and the technical angle are playing together. I would like to begin not with the new website, but I would like to present for you some thoughts and ideas that we have made about our communication in general. It's an old parliament, and we diffuse a lot of information all the time, but we have never really been thinking about if we did it the right way. We have so much information for what we call the professionals, and I think it's very similar to what Bruno Penne said earlier. The professionals, there's a lot of information, but what about the communication for other groups? And that's why we started to make a sort of a strategy for our communication, and we defined our mission. And the mission for us as an administration is to diffuse or disseminate the knowledge about the Danish parliament, the parliamentary process, and the Danish democracy. And our vision is that our democracy should be among the most open in the world. And then we went on a bit further to see how do we do that. And we pointed out that, of course, everybody has to know the democratic rights and obligations. And the second bullet is perhaps the important one, that it's necessary to be very open and have give the possibility for all citizens to get information about the legal process. And then, as a last bullet, everybody should be allowed to go in and visit the Danish parliament. And we made some focus areas about our communication. We want, of course, to talk about the legislative power. We want to talk about the framework, so it's the constitution and the rights of the citizens. And then, as a little plus, we want to tell people about this beautiful building the parliament is residing in. And then we have defined some target groups. Bruno from Belgium said before, the professionals, we have so much information for the professionals, but we have to think about other groups, the intermediaries, the journalists, librarians, school teachers, and the big group called citizens. We got the young people, the interested citizen, and so on. And now, after defining this communication strategy, we want to see how do we fulfill the strategy. And of course the basic, the primary thing to use is the internet. So to hit the target groups, the three target groups, the internet is the most important channel. So we would make a new website, and now I will give the word to Liselotte.
Yes, and this is, I'm sorry in Danish, but it is the front page of our new website, which had to be launched at the 1st of October this year. I will also say that it is delayed for 1 year, and that's mostly because we and the external vendor, which have helped us developing this site, we have underestimated this huge project, and especially the integration to our document management system, which are called TinkDoc, as I mentioned. I think that we just talked about the Parlis, this integration we have made here, and it has
take a lot of time. But this is the front page, and I think it's follow the rules for like the second generation of website. We have four head lines. One is news, what's up in the Folketing today. And we have a headline about the parliament's work, the members, the committees and everything. And then we have headlines about documents, parliamentary documentations. And the fourth one is about democracy. So, I will tell you a little bit of the story about it, because if you look at our website just now at the folketing.dk, you will see a very old one. It's from 1997. It's very popular for the professional users, but it's outdated in many ways. A technical platform, design, accessibility, and as Søren mentioned, that we really want to make a new website, which also are pointed against the normal users, the citizens, the students, the school teachers, and normal people, you can say. And then again, accessibility, it's a really huge issue in Denmark these years. I think that all the websites are going to be, we have such a competition in Denmark where we every year, which pointed out the best on the net, but I think last year some ironically called it best for blind, because it's very important that your accessibility is in a good condition. So the criteria for success on the new website is that it should be for all users, and we should increase the accessibility and follow this W3C standards, which other here has mentioned today. And at last, but not least, we want to make greater transparency on the web, especially about information about the members, information about the legislative process, and the parliamentary documentation. And how do we secure that we make a website for all users? We have spent a lot of time partly to analyze and make a lot of statistics on the old website. How is it used and who by who? And how do we navigate at the pages? And that was the starting point for making a specification of demands to the functionality of the new website. We use a special developing method, you can say, where we describe personas. We have found out, I think, 10 target groups, for example, a member, of course, a secretary, a jurist in the ministry, a student, a school teacher. And then we have made such a fictive description of 10 users with name, with pictures, and a little storytelling about each of these users. And we have used it to secure that during the development of the new web pages that we all the time remember their demands, the users' demands, so that it's not us as the technical staff that, oh, that will be smart or something like that, but think about the users. So for securing that it also will be the real thing, we have made a lot of user tests, both before and under, and now in the last phase of the development. And it's a test about accessibility, navigation, and we have made a lot of prototypes, which we have tried on different users. A little more about this accessibility. If you don't know the W3C standards, it says that you shall make your website so that blind, colorblind, deaf, people with cognitive disabilities can use it. And another thing of accessibility is also the browsers. You could use any kind of browsers so that everybody can. No one must be denied to use the website because they use a special browser like Opera or Safari or something like that. So again, this kind of stuff we test just now, I think with the other day. Søren and I saw a blind person who are trying to use our site. It was very exciting, and I'm really glad that I'm not blind, because even if the site is accessible, then it's hard anyway. But how do we create more transparency on the web? And here I will tell you something about the members. It is today at the old web we have a lot of information about their CV, their political work. But the new thing is that we will put on information about their interests and their expenses on the web. I'll come back to that. The other thing is the parliamentary documentation. How could we make more transparency about that? And the last thing, which Søren will talk about later at the end of this presentation, is about e-democracy, or what we have talked about today, dialogue on the net, two-way communication. Because what I'm talking about here, transparency, it's just information, you can say, or one-way communication. But it's interesting anyway. So here I have another example from our new website. It's about a member. Helge Adam Møller, he is a member of the Presidium of the Danish Folketing. He's from the Conservative Party. And here you see his CV. That's not new. Another, the next one, it's which committee is a part of, and it is a spokesman for any area or something like that. But a new thing is this here, you can see his interests. Are he sitting in some board, is he in connection with some private companies? Do we get salary from them? Or so that you can see this kind of information, which could be interesting in according to special political cases. And the last one, which are very controversial, I think, it is to publish all his expenses. Expenses to houses, hotels, flight tickets, train tickets, taxes, that kind of stuff. And this list is long. And one of the reasons why we choose to do that is because we very often get the question from journalists who want this information. And we spend a lot of time in the administration gathering this information for the journalists. So therefore, we decided together with the politician to publish this information on the website. And I think it's a good example for increased transparency. And I also have an example about parliamentary documentation. It is so that we have a lot of documentation to get today, like you have, of course, all about the bills, all about the committee works, all documents, recording from meetings, TV, streaming on the net, video on demand, we today have from our EU committee meetings, and possibility for make subscriptions on parliamentary documents. But I will show you an example. Anyway, this is a bill. I'm sorry, it's in Danish, but it's because it's not translated to English yet. But the idea here is that you can see in the left side, you have a timetable for a bill. I think you can say that's called the first, second, third reading. And then you can see how long is in the process is this bill. Now this is an old bill, so it has been adopted, so therefore there's no markation where it is, but you can see if a bill is under a second treatment. And then you, under the readings, you can click in and see all documents on about the bill. The bill, of course, and the speeches, presenting the bill, and all the recordings, the question and answers, which are made in the committee work, and the voting results. And I think one of the slides I have made a copy of is the voting result on our new website. This will look like this, where you can see how do all the members how do they vote for this bill, and you can see with the names who vote how, and The exciting thing here is if some members, they are voting against their party, of course, and that happens. So that's also an example on a new kind of transparency on our web. And then Søren will tell a little more about e-democracy.
Yes. Well, now we have seen some of the ideas we have towards the professionals, how they can see the bills going through. You have seen what we try to do to journalists, because we are telling them how many money the politicians are using when they travel or whatever they do. The thing that I said in the beginning, we want to get in contact with the citizens. And on our new website, we will have a lot of what I would say one-way communication, as many parliamentary websites have. We will have informations, we will have films, we will have a lot about the history, we will have themes, actual themes, what is going on at the moment, and we'll try to describe those situations. We are making a way where you can compare the party programs. So what do they think about abortion, for example? What do you think about alcohol politics? And then you can compare all the parties. We do try to get a bit of dialogue, but that's for the young people when we make this parliamentary day for the youth. Before they come, they can block and in that way make discussions, but not with the politicians. And then, of course, we have FAQs and telephone service. So we do have got a lot of those things, what we call the... what would you call it? You can call it level 2 or 3, I would say. I think the level 5 of how to get the accessibility, Liselotte was telling about for all sorts of people with the different handicaps. But the fourth group, which Bruno Penny from Belgium also talked about, is what I would say is a really difficult one. How do we get this dialogue with the citizens? We as well have been thinking, is it interesting for us to go on Facebook, go to Twitter, all those services? It might be, but then again, we are not sure. Some years ago, you had a big thing called Second Life. Everybody lived on Second Life. We had banks, universities, everything. And I don't know if Second Life still exists, but we're definitely not going to make the Danish parliament into Second Life. And then we have all these social services. Are we going to use them or not? Then we have been thinking, why don't we try to go a step further? And this is just thinking I'm presenting today. So why don't we try to make the parliament virtual? So why don't we make hearings on the internet with the real politicians sitting in the hearings? Why don't we make committee meetings on the internet? Actually, the members could be in Copenhagen, the other one could be in Jutland, and then they meet on the net and they have the meeting on the net. Could we make elections or referendums by the internet? Those thoughts, I think, will make it possible to have a real interesting dialogue with the citizens and the parliament. But I think that we have to go there and not just try to live with Facebook or other things, even though they might be okay to use. Those are things we are discussing, and Liselotte and I discuss it a lot. and we see, of course, there's a lot of barriers. There's a lot of problems in introducing a virtual democracy. We have mentioned some of them here. There's, of course, technical barriers. We have to make it function. But I think that's the least problem. That's not a big problem. Another problem was not mentioned here, it's how much the internet is spread out in the country. And Denmark is a country where more than 90% who has access to the internet. So that's not a problem either. There's one I put down is lack of resources. I have had one semester of economy, and I have learned this expression called lack of resources. We have to get somebody to pay it. That's not a big problem either. The problem is the third bullet, it's because now, if you are a member, you are elected into a parliament, but we have this we call a representative democracy. But what if you open up for the democracy and everybody is allowed to participate directly? That is a barrier. It's very difficult to deal with. The other thing, if you, for example, want to make committee meetings on the internet, and we wanted to use the internet much more, then we have this problem with the members elected. They are not all that interested in the web. They don't have the idea that they get fulfilled their need to be seen. The visibility is not all that big on the internet after all. And I have to say, we have young members in the parliament, and they use the net a lot, and they are very active on Facebook and Twitter, and they had a lot of people responding to them. But we have a lot of members plus 55, and they are not all that interested in the internet. So there we have a barrier. So, and that is what I call the skepticism about the web. Are we supposed to use the web for our democracy? And I think this is only some reflection we're doing at the moment. But if you know young people, as you probably do, they'll say people 15 years old, they have never been to a bank. They have never been to the what do you call it, kommunekontor, to the local authorities. They do all the things on the web. So I think in a couple of years, democracy is to be spread, used on the net. But at the moment, that's my last bullet, there's a lack of pressure because the young people are still too young to make this pressure, and the elder people, my age and a bit older, they don't need the web. So the pressure is not all that intense at the moment. And then again, there I just have to say that this week there was a young student from a university in Denmark who presented a new version of the Parliament web, where it was possible for everybody to go in and discuss the bills. And it was on the radio, on the papers, and it's been a big thing in 1 week. Look what this young guy is doing. He's doing all the things that the Parliament is not capable of doing. And that was the last story I would tell. Yes, but that was some reflection in the end of how to get closer to the citizens. And I'm very interested in hearing your point of views or questions. So, to be or Liselotte. Thank you.
And Søren, do you know whether there are questions related to the presentation? Piet, please.
Have you been thinking already about organizing this two-way communication? And let me try to make it very small and say, imagine that you have a contact area on the website, as we, for instance, have, where people can ask questions or put comments. Did you organize the response to that? For us, that's a hell of a problem. It seems easy, but...
No, we haven't been all that concrete yet. But I think it's a technical problem that can be solved in some way. It's probably very difficult. Actually, we have been trying to make a small virtual, a virtual parliament, where you can walk and you can go in and sit down and have a meeting, and then you can speak up, and other people who is going in there can hear it as well, and so you can communicate there. But if you have to communicate by talking or by writing, I don't know yet. So no, the answer is no. We haven't got anything. Do we? There's a lot of who knows those things.
But I think about e-democracy, our conclusion is that we have thought about all these things and we have proposed it for the politicians, but they don't want it. So it's not us. The technique are no problem. I think that the functionality is also no problem. We found out, but we have to get the politicians with us, and that's the problem in Denmark.
Of time.
Did your politics, did they agree to put on the website these mandates and these dispenses? Dispenses?
Oh, yeah.
Did they agree with that?
Yes, they did agree. It has been a long process, and they've been talking because before we didn't inform how much money the members spent on traveling or whatever, but now we do, and it was a decision the leaders of the parliament decided, and that's the way it is. And I think at the moment when you see all the problems in Great Britain, I think the politicians are very happy in Denmark that we have this transparency. Yeah. And England.
I was just going to say that MPs might not want it, but sometimes the decision is taken out of their hands. And I know that in the UK, the things that we haven't done on the Parliament website, other organisations have done for us. So they've had league tables to show when MPs have been in the chamber and how often they've asked questions and things like that. I think the other point I just wanted to make as well was, in terms of dialogue, you need to remember it's not just dialogue between the Parliament or the MPs and the people, but the people have a dialogue with each other so that they can organise themselves around issues, and it's a way of campaigning more effectively so that communities grow up around issues and kind of it becomes a lobbying tool as well.
I just think that our ambitions are higher, and we want to that the politicians should be within this discussion, because else it could be anywhere.
I have one question. How many people are working on the project, on the launch project? In the communication department and on the hand on the IT department?
We organized in that way that Søren and I, we are together, project chiefs, I would say, and then we have a project group on 4 persons, 2 communication people, 1 IT database man from my department, and then 1 from our library, who are a documentation specialist, I would say. So it's a very good team, but now here, and I said that the integration work was very huge. I think that the 5 or 6 people in my department are working with the website now to be finished.
And also in the communication department, there are also more people than these project managers?
Spend a lot of resources. But when the website is on air, we would have 2 communication people working on it full time. At the moment, we got 6 or 7 working on it full time to get it ready. Yeah.
And for the period, you mentioned that you are late. can you give me an idea how long did you develop it?
From how long we are delayed?
From the idea of an agency or
Okay, the whole process. I just talked with Anna from Sweden here in the lunchtime, and I remember when we started this work. You came to Denmark, and I think it was in 2006, and Anna said no, it was in 2005. So where we started the planning work, and so it's 4 years.
I ask all this question because we are in a launch period, and okay, thank you.
Valentin, Soren, I think there are no more questions, and then we are on time for a coffee break.